There's an image that the Buddha offers in one of his teachings. Said that a deva, a being of a being, not a human being, but a being came to the Buddha and asked him, "How did you cross the flood?" Where the flood refers to all of the habits and reactivity and patterns of mind that catch us and send us like thrashing and over rapids and into whirlpools and eddies. This image of the flood describing our struggles, basically. And the Buddha is said to have replied, "By neither tarrying nor hurrying, I crossed the flood." The being asked for a little elaboration, and the Buddha said, "Well, when I tarried, I sank. And when I hurried, I got swept away. So by neither tarrying nor hurrying, I crossed the flood." To meet that image, that image actually arose for me in a retreat I was sitting a couple years back. The image of this very just simple meet this experience and then move to the next one. Whatever's here, it's met fully, and yet it's not held on to. The kind of the holding on to it, trying to grab onto something that could be a kind of a sinking. Sinking can be understood in many ways. Sinking could be understood as falling into sloth and torpor or holding on, a kind of a contraction around experience. But nor is there a hurrying to get past this, or there's not a hurrying to get to the next thing. Neither tarrying nor hurrying. And so this image came into my mind and it created a kind of calmness in my mind in terms of meeting the experience. Like, yep, just this moment. Meet it fully. And then the next moment, there's a natural shifting and changing of experience. So don't hold on to it, but don't also be looking to grab on to something else, something other. So that image has inspired me in terms of kind of a way to engage, how to make effort in the practice, neither tarrying nor hurrying. Someone asked a question, I think it was this morning in the chat. Is there a place for inviting, for savoring, lingering, soaking in an experience? Now, on the surface of it, it might sound like that implies a tarrying, but in my experience, the neither tarrying nor hurrying allows for that quality of really meeting, savoring what's here in this moment. Sometimes it can be useful to consciously kind of have that sense of really kind of landing in or savoring, tasting the quality of the experience. And yet at times that can also be a kind of a greed. So be curious. You don't have to not savor just because you think it might be greed. Just land with the experience. And the great thing about this practice is, and Gil sometimes says it's self-correcting. That if we are being attentive to what's happening, if we're noticing a kind of a savoring and a delight of that savoring of experience, a sense of really settling into experience. If there's any clinging there, if it's not experience, if there's no sense of clinging experience to suffering in that moment, don't worry about it. There might be some extra liking there. There might be a sense of, oh, that feels pretty good. But if it's not experienced as a kind of a contraction or as a suffering, just don't worry about it. If at some point you find yourself kind of savoring and savoring and savoring and savoring, and then it's like, why am I not able to savor this? And get frustrated because savoring isn't there. That's when you start looking at the suffering. That's when you start noticing that there's been clinging to the savoring, when the suffering becomes obvious. And this is the way in which the practice is self-correcting. The suffering, when we're curious about the experience, the entirety of the experience, what's here? We don't have to go looking for clinging. We will feel it. We will feel it when we're kind of curious about the experience as a whole. So we don't have to go looking for it, but when it will become apparent. For myself, somebody asked a question about effort early in the retreat that I haven't had a chance to get to, and this feels a little connected, so I'll in tangent kind of respond to part of that question. In my own practice, I kind of had a sense that I was a little bit clinging to the sense of being a meditator. I knew that my mind had this capacity for investigation, and I appreciated that, probably more than appreciated it. I kind of relied on it, and at times I kind of like used that capacity to help me navigate really difficult things. So anger and self-hatred arising. There were times where I actively brought that capacity to investigate, can I know this? Can I be with this? There may have been, and undoubtedly was, because over time I began to see that there was quite a bit of clinging around this investigation, into the investigation in my mind. Years into my practice, I began to see how much stickiness there was to the doing of investigation. But when I was working with investigating self-hatred, the suffering or the clinging to that investigation, that dharma understanding, the clinging to that dharma understanding was way less problematic, way less unwholesome than the activity of self-hatred in the mind. There's a teaching that the Buddha sometimes says, another phrase I like of the Buddha, by relying on this, abandon that. And so by relying on investigation, the mind was able to understand something about self-hatred, was able to understand how the mind was constructing that, and there was a lot of freedom, a lot of releasing that came with that. Over time, those more the bigger reactivity of my mind, the bigger kind of the anger was huge for me, and the self-hatred was pretty big for me. Those were pretty all-encompassing kind of mind states. Miserableness. I was just this miserable, angry, self-hating person. It was not a very pleasant place to be. When those, as those began to fall away, as those began to weaken over time, the mind began to kind of see how it was using investigation was very sticky. And at a certain point, there was a couple year stretch of my practice where it was so painful to do the practice in the way that I'd done it. To those habits of mind around the doing of practice. It was so painful that I had no choice but to kind of just let go of that way of practicing. It was a real challenge. And it was like, well, how do I practice without doing investigation? How does that even work? I entered into this kind of space of like really just kind of a low energy, because it's like I couldn't do the thing that brought up the energy, which was the investigation. And so it was a hard stretch in practice. A couple years of just seeing the suffering of that. But if I had let go of the investigation too early, or if I had, you know, I wasn't experiencing the suffering of that investigation when I was investigating those more painful patterns of mind. It took those more painful patterns of mind to fall away before the pain of the clinging to the investigation became obvious. That's when it's appropriate to start to look at that. If I had, while I was earlier in my practice, thought, oh, maybe I'm clinging to investigation, maybe I shouldn't investigate, my practice wouldn't have gone very far. So by relying on this, there was a letting go of something else. And then, you know, then there's a relying on something else, a kind of a recognition of, okay, can't do that. How does this practice work anyway? It was an interesting exploration. I discovered, just to kind of not just leave that story hanging, but what I discovered is that at times the mind would investigate, and that wasn't suffering. But when I was involved in investigating, that was suffering. And so I had to be patient and let the mind do the work and not be involved in trying to do the figuring out. That took a couple of years. That took a couple of years to really, for that pattern to really release. So in terms of making effort, you know, sometimes the effort, you know, may have some greed in there or some aversion in there. There may be some in there, but if the greed or the aversion of the doing of the practice is, let's say, less felt, or maybe not even felt at all. Sometimes it's not. Like for me, it was, I kind of knew intellectually, I'm probably attached to this, doing this practice, but I didn't feel the suffering of it. If anything, it just felt like it was helping me. I mean, the being with the experience so clearly brought some relief and some ease around those difficult patterns that it felt like it was wholesome. It felt helpful. So the bulk of the experience, the majority of the experience, had a wholesome quality to it. The feeling of the ease around those difficult patterns, even if there was a little bit of clinging to the investigation, to the doing of the practice. And so that, you know, sometimes our effort will have some greed or aversion in it. But just, you know, it's self-correcting, as Gil says, you know, that as we practice, the more difficult things begin to fall away, and the suffering that is kind of connected with how we're practicing then can begin to reveal itself. And that then is when we need to really explore that. So sometimes I use this phrase, you know, we can let suffering be kind of a guide in a way, a leader, a kind of to help us know what needs to be attended to.